This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today, we hope to bring you some conversations about the new round of funding that the federal government is sending out to small businesses. And we hope to have some conversations with a couple of folks, one who runs one of those startup accelerators and another who operates a small business, to talk about their experiences with the PPP loans. And a little later on in the show, we hope to discuss these with a small business association representative, how this next round of funding is going to go. We're having some technical difficulties today and trying to connect with our guest, but we are going to try to get these folks on to see if we can have these conversations. If not, we'll drop out and air one of our previous segments. But I think one of our guests has just joined us. We apologize for the errors. We're having some software difficulties, but we do have one of our guests on the line. And it is Alan Woods. He is the managing.
That is correct.
All right, Alan, I'm so glad you're with us. He's a managing partner and creative director at Mortar. Alan, so glad you could join us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And we are all navigating changes and adjustments. And you guys are doing great. Don't worry about it. We'll figure this all out.
Well, I appreciate the inspirational message for us. Before we talk about your personal experience, we also do hope to add Karen Williams from Sewindipity to talk about her experience as well. As soon as we get her on the line, we'll discuss her experience as well. But since we have Alan Woods from Mortar, first, just tell our listeners what Mortar is. I know we've had you all on before, but give us a reminder of what your organization is.
Absolutely. So Mortar is an organization that was started about 6 years ago by me, Derek Brazil, and William Thomas. And the core idea of Mortar was that we wanted to create an organization that made it possible for people who lived in communities to be a part of the growth and development of their business community that was growing around them. A lot of times there are people with great ideas, great talents and gifts and abilities, but maybe they just don't know how to convert those things into, an actual tangible business, understanding the different principles of operating a business. So we created Mortar to do that, to help them through that process. It's a 15-week accelerator using a curriculum that we developed that is culturally competent. And it just helps guide people through that process.
And so you're in a unique position because you're an organization that's been impacted by the global pandemic, like so many of
Absolutely.
Us. And you help small businesses get their sea legs, and they are more than likely impacted by this as well. So you're seeing a variety of different perspectives. So first, let's just talk a little bit about Mortar's experience. Did Mortar apply for one of these loans that became available?
Yes. So we applied for the payroll protection, so the PPP. We did apply for that one. And we are still, kind of in a holding pattern, to kind of waiting to see what happens next. We did not get that approved from the first round of funding. And so we are, holding out hope for the second round of funding, if that takes place, to hope that we can be able to get that as well.
So when you say that you were not approved, is that to say that a lending organization declined?
No, it's not when I say we weren't approved, it just means that we did not go through the full process where they say, okay, you're approved, here's the money. Because I don't believe that there's a denial per se. I think it's more so you're in line for us. At least that's been the experience, is that we didn't get denied. We just did not move through the full process. So we kind of were inching along. And then when we got to the point where they were supposed to have the Small Business Administration give the approval to move forward, that was where we stalled out. And then that was when we discovered that the money was no longer in existence.
Did you attempt to go through a bank, a large bank, or a neighborhood credit union?
Yeah, so we tried to go through a couple banks, actually. We have a couple different relationships with different banks. And I think that one of the challenges that we experienced is that though dates were thrown out and people said, okay, you can apply on April 3rd. On April 3rd, none of the banks were in a position where they were ready to move forward. And because, like I said, we have multiple accounts in different places for different things because we have different arms of our organization, and to keep those things separate, we have different accounts in different places. So we were able to reach out to different banks that we have relationships with, and they essentially told us the same thing, like they are not in a position to move forward, and that they needed a little more time to figure it out. And so I think that what happened for us is while they were figuring it out, some other organizations that maybe we didn't have relationships with were starting to kind of work behind the scenes with maybe some of their other customers, which leads to, you know, organizations like, you know, Ruth Chris or Shake Shack, who maybe have a deeper banking relationship, to be able to kind of start the process maybe before the banks were quote unquote ready. And so that was one of the challenges that we experienced, is that our bank just wasn't ready. And so by the time it actually went in, you know, we were, you know, in a different place.
So what's at stake for Mortar?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Well, let me ask you, what is at stake for you all? What are you concerned about if you're not able to get this funding?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's at stake for us is existence. You know, let's just be honest. There are a lot of small businesses. There are a lot of nonprofits that will not survive the COVID-19 pandemic, period. There are businesses that could not have planned for this. I don't think any business had a plan in place for this. And so right now, we just have to figure out, as a nonprofit, what can we cut? We typically operate really lean anyway, so it makes it harder for us to start thinking about what can we cut at this time, because we try not to spend any money that we don't have to spend. But we are also, at the same time, always looking to bring in and generate as much revenue as possible. So there are people for us that our clientele outside of the city, because of the curriculum and the programming that we've developed, that becomes an earned revenue model for us, where we have relationships in other cities. And it's even difficult to kind of maintain that part of the business, where, you know, there may be foundations who are saying that they're a little more cautious right now because they're not sure what's going to happen. So maybe they're not doing grant funding right now, or there may be individuals who could be in a place of capacity to give to our organization to help us continue this work for entrepreneurs, but they are being a little more cautious as well. So if we are unable to get funds generated and we're unable to cut any more of our expenses, then we would end up in a situation where ultimately we may not exist for our entrepreneurial community.
And in the interest of full disclosure, we want to note that Cincinnati Public Radio has also applied for similar funding from the federal funds. Cincinnati Public Radio operates WVXU and WGUC. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. We want to hear from you if you're a small business operator and what your experience has been in applying for these federal funds as new funding becomes available thanks to the federal government's adoption of updated legislation. 513-419-7100. And later on in the show, we'll be joined by a representative from the Small Business Administration, Great Lakes Region, to talk more about this. So feel free to give us a call and have your questions answered. I want to note we are also joined on the line by Karen Williams. She's the owner of Sewindipity Lounge. Karen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Karen, for our listeners' sake and mine, tell us what Sewindipity Lounge is.
We are a sewing studio. It's an all-in-one place where people get alterations done. We teach people how to sew. We sell fabrics and notions. And it's an opportunity, a community where people come together and just become friends through sewing.
And so you're a smaller operation.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're a smaller operation like so many in our community. How have you been impacted by the global pandemic?
Well, we had to shut down because we are a touchy-feely kind of organization. We actually look people in the eye, show them, take fabric from them, show them how you sew this up. We do alterations. We're hemming clothes and pinning in places. It's a close proximity type of business. And with this new rule, you're supposed to be 6 feet away from a person, and we can't keep sewing 6 feet away. Now, technology has it where you can use, you know, online visuals, and you have all of these wonderful opportunities. But when you really want to teach people how to sew, when they can't really figure it out online, we are right there to really show them how you do it, to explain how to do it. And especially when you're doing alterations, you can't do it without touching the clothes and pinning the garments on folks and that kind of thing.
So, well, Karen, let me ask you, with these restrictions on the way that you do business, basically forcing you to shut down for the time being, what type of situation does your business find itself in?
It's in a situation where we don't know how to open unless we come up with something very creative, unless we have robots doing the teaching, which is not going to happen anytime soon. So we are trying to figure out how best to open up the store and still service the people who really want to learn how to sew. And so in the meantime, we've turned to what a lot of people are doing. We're actually sewing masks, and we're doing real creative custom types of masks for folks just to help pay some of the bills. But we can't continue to do this for so long because a lot of our business comes from alterations and classes.
Karen, have you applied for any of the federal funding available?
Well, my husband, who is the other half of what we do here, did try to apply, but when he went online, they said the application system had closed down. So we're hoping that we can, again, apply for the forgivable loan where we can have some help with rent and utilities. We don't have... we have contractual folks who work with us with alterations and teach classes. So we don't have, per se, employees, but we still have fixed expenses that have to be paid. And with us not having any revenue coming in, we really need help in that arena.
So we'll note that the federal legislation offers loans through private banks, through the Small Business Administration, and also the emergency loan, the $10,000, up to $10,000 that can be available.
Yeah.
What are you doing for personal income, Karen, while this is going on? Are you eligible for unemployment, for example?
Well, not really. My husband and I, we have been retired since 2005 and 6. And we opened this up because we saw a need, Serendipity Lounge in 2016, to provide a service for those in the community, especially downtown. So we still can live, but our dream of helping the community dies because we cannot support this with our personal funds. You know, this was extra that we put in from our personal funds initially to start it. Once we got it going in 2016, it's basically operated on its own by having generating revenue that comes in. But if we don't have any revenue coming in, we can't keep it afloat. So we're at a pickle as to how we're going to do this. And something has to give. We have to maybe be more creative, or maybe we're going to have to close. I'm not sure what we're going to do.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation about the issues being faced by local small businesses and organizations amid the global pandemic and the quest for some of those federal funds that have been made available. We're also joined on the line by Alan Woods. He's the managing partner and creative director at Mortar. Alan, you're hearing Karen's story from Serendipity Lounge, and you work with a lot of startups and small businesses. Is her story similar to what you're hearing from some of the folks that you've helped previously?
Absolutely. And I think hearing even this realization that Karen may ultimately have to let her dream die, as she worded it, is concerning for me specifically, because I've actually worked with Karen before. Karen has actually provided services for Mortar. And last year, my oldest daughter, who has an interest in fashion design, actually went through her kids' camp and learned how to make a skirt. And, you know, it really, you know, Karen is really doing work in the community that matters and really built up community and ultimately, you know, can help other people pursue their dreams. So to hear that there are challenges that are putting her dream in jeopardy when she is ultimately building a business that is helping people pursue their dreams, which is the same thing that we do at Mortar, that is a challenge for me to even hear, you know, and especially to know that million-dollar companies, you know, were able to get the funds when 80% of Americans work at some version of a small business, you know, and but we weren't able to get 80% of the funds that were distributed. And that's just like, it's just a challenge to hear that, you know, like if it had been distributed differently, that could have been something that made a bigger difference with a broader community. But yeah, we're hearing the exact same thing in our entrepreneurial community. The first thing that we did when all of this started to happen, we have 270 alumni who come through our program and who've graduated from the program. And so we actually went all the way to the beginning. We went back 6 years and started calling everybody who has ever graduated from our program to find out what, you know, kind of do a wellness check. How are you guys doing? Like, what's happening with you? How's your business? Was your business in operation at the time that this happened? And if so, what's happening with your business right now? And then we were able to figure out what the true need was that a lot of people have. Thankfully, we were in a position that we have a grant fund for our alumni. We do like loans and grants for people who graduated from our program. So we were actually able to look at converting some of our that cash that's in the loan fund into grants. And that's what we're still waiting to figure out with some of our other people who have funded that loan fund. Can we convert this to grants so that we can do emergency grants for our alumni? So we were actually in a position last week to give out $10,000 worth of loans or worth of grants to our alumni group. And that's money that they will not have to pay back. That is money that will help them to continue to sustain their businesses right now. In the meantime, we have a full list of alumni from Mortar who are still in business, still operating on the front of our website, at the top of our Facebook, on our Twitter, like it's everywhere. And it has a full list of our alumni and what services they're offering. If they're doing specials for Mother's Day, if they're doing carryout, delivery, whatever. There are people who make hand sanitizer that are on the list. There are so many people who can still be supported through this process. And I don't know that, you know, people understand that if you are still working and if you are still drawing an income, this is a perfect time for you to start really investing in our community and in our businesses, because ultimately entrepreneurs are going to be the ones that help this country through the recovery. We are going to be the ones who build businesses. We are going to be the ones who provide services and products that help the nation recover from this. And if we don't invest in the entrepreneurs now, there's a chance that a lot of them will not make it through this to help us with the recovery effort.
And we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment. Karen, hold that thought. We're going to come back to you in just a moment and get more from you. And Alan, you as well. We want to hear from you all listening. 513-419-7100. Quick break. More after this. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our exploration of the new funds made available and the previous funds as well, and the local struggle by small business owners and organization operators on obtaining some of those funds. Full disclosure, Cincinnati Public Radio has applied for some of that federal funding, and we await word. We are joined on the line by Karen Williams, an owner of Serendipity Lounge. Karen, thank you for sticking around.
Yes.
And Mortar, Managing Partner and Creative Director Alan Woods is with us also. Alan, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And Karen, you were just about to say something before we cut to break.
Well, you know, this is a new normal. I am 70 years old, And I've never seen anything like this happen before. And so there are a lot of issues associated with my age and even this whole pandemic. You know, we're supposed to be the group that's more likely to get sick and all of that. But I'm a very healthy person. And so in this situation, I look at it as we got a bunch of lemons that we are dealing with here. And usually you say, well, you can make lemonade out of lemons. The lemonade machine is broken in this situation. So what are you to do? And this is where the new normal has caused a situation where you really have to think not out of the box, but beyond the box. You can't even see a box. And you have to make some fruit, a fruit punch from something that you have never experienced before. You have to find some kind of innovative, creative tools to change how you do things. And I'm not willing to give up. We just got to figure out how to do it. Now, some people are able to get the funds and whatever to do what they need to do. But what if you don't have those funds available? You're going to have to come from somewhere you've never been before to figure out how to keep your business open. Because if you feel that you have a really good business, you have a good purpose, you're here for the community, some way, somehow, you got to make fruit punch out of this. And I don't know how you do it, but you have to study and read and observe, talk with people, maybe come together and collaborate. But I think it can be done because the country is run on small businesses. That's how our government gets all these taxes and things, from small businesses. It's not the big conglomerates and corporations. It's small business. And to do us like we were done and giving all this money to these big corporations, I think is so unfair and an affront to us who are in the trenches daily working to pay our little taxes and to keep our doors open so that people have a purpose for living in this world that seems to be crazy at this point in time, especially for what I do, because they get a lot of fulfillment and pleasure out of creating garments and having clothes that look good on them and being in a place where people care. So we got to just do so. Serendipity Lounge is not closing its doors to the idea of something new and different, because when we open up, we make it totally different than what we are now.
Alan Woods is a managing partner and creative director at Mortar. And Alan, we crawled out of the Great Recession of the early 2010s and late 2000s, and we did see an entrepreneurial boom around here through organizations like your own and similar ones in the region, helping small business, either tech or just regular small businesses, get going. What impact do you think something like this could have on that long term? As we see entrepreneurs work to make money appear out of thin air anyway, and facing that struggle on a daily basis, but now being forced to shut down out of no fault of their own, what type of impact does this have on an entrepreneurial spirit long term, in your view?
You know, I think that it's going to be something that really has us dig even deeper into unknown levels of resilience. You know, there's so many things and so many challenges, specifically for the entrepreneurs that we faced, which are primarily, you know, Black entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, other minorities who have faced systemic obstacles in their quest for entrepreneurship. And this becomes another systemic obstacle, because when you think about it, it is a system that is in place that has kept money directly from going to the smaller entrepreneurs, as Karen was saying. These are things that are systems. They are things that continue to perpetuate the rich get richer, you know, scenario that we've seen play out in this country for so long that I can imagine that there are going to be some people who are completely discouraged by the possibility of entrepreneurship at this time. But there are going to be some people who come out of this in a way where they're even stronger, where they're able to, you know, dig down and find some other sense of purpose. And they're going to be able to push through this. This is definitely going to be able to separate a lot of entrepreneurs who were, you know, maybe jumping into this because they saw something cool on Shark Tank versus the people who are like, I'm doing this for a purpose. You know, if they can survive this, the people who are doing this with a real purpose and a real intent, those are going to be the people who take us to the next iteration of what entrepreneurship really looks like after this, if they can survive it. But to survive it, we are going to have to prop them up. We're going to have to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to support them. I mean, whether that is sending, you know, your service provider that you can't go to right now, if it's sending them something on Cash App or sending them, you know, a Yelp review or a gift card or something, they need our support right now more than ever. I sent my barber a Cash App the other day just because I know that he's having some challenges right now with not being able to operate his barbershop. And so if there's anything I can do, whether it's words of encouragement or financial, you know, capacity, like, this is the time to do it. And it's time to really get behind our entrepreneurs. Cincinnati is a very entrepreneurial community, and it's time for us to get behind our entrepreneurs and show them that we have their backs in the same way that they've had our back in this process of building up Cincinnati to have the reputation that it has.
Alan Woods is the managing partner and creative director at Mortar, and Karen Williams is an owner of Serendipity Lounge. Thank you so much for sharing these stories. I hope we get to talk again when things improve for both of your organizations. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We got a comment from Bob, who was listening to us, and he said, Serendipity is a wonderful business, and Karen Williams was right on when she said small businesses are getting hurt by the system. That's a reference to Karen Williams, who was a guest in our previous segment, an owner of a small business and is shut down currently by the global pandemic. The U.S. Small Business Administration Great Lakes region operates offices in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Rob Scott is the regional administrator and joins us live on the line now. Rob, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me, sir.
It's our pleasure to have you, Rob. We just had some small business operators on in our previous segment. I know you got to hear a little bit of that. There's frustration and concern, sadness, despair, sense of helplessness even among those who had hoped to receive some funding the first time around and did not. What is the Small Business Administration saying to folks who are in that position?
Certainly, there has been more money appropriated by Congress and signed into law by President Trump that are available. They opened up today at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. What I would say for those that missed out on the first round of funding, there's a second round. They need to have a conversation with their lender. If they haven't, you can find a lender that are offering these Paycheck Protection Program funds. And they can contact their local lender or find a lender on our website at sba.gov/paycheck protection.
So for folks who did apply the first time around and were unsuccessful, what do they need to do? Do they need to apply again or do they remain in queue? How does that work?
So with the SBA, it's the lender that enters in the application with the SBA system. We do not have a line. When we shut it off, we don't take any more applications. There's no line. So what they need to do is they need to talk to their lender, make sure that their lender can assure them that their application will be submitted into the SBA system this second round. If they can't do it, then what I would recommend those folks is to find another lender. There is a lot of success with some of your smaller community banks, credit unions, and also there are some fintechs that are out there that are also offering these PPP loans.
There are some differences this time around compared to the previous allocation of funds. Can you talk a little bit about some of the priorities that might be available for folks who did not qualify last time or did not receive access to funds last time?
Yeah, certainly. So there was $310 billion reappropriated. Out of that, there were two different sets of $30 billion set-asides. And those set-asides are for lenders that are smaller in nature. So they are for your CDFIs that are out there. They're also for your very small community banks and very small credit union. The two different pots of monies that were set aside in $30 billion each, is for one of them is for a lender up to $10 billion in assets. The other one is for a lender between $10 billion and $50 billion. So So that really encompasses some of your very, very, very small lenders that are in your community that I'm certainly most of your audience here has a relationship with, but that do provide more kind of hands-on PLC approach to customer service. And that would be another strategy for your audience is to tap into that.
And we are talking with Rob Scott right now. He represents the U.S. Small Business Administration Great Lakes region, which includes offices in Ohio and Indiana, among other Midwestern states. Let me ask you about, I guess, how much time people can expect there to be funding available. The previous amount ran out pretty quickly, about 14 days. What do we expect this time?
Likely by the end of this week. So there's not a lot of time. If you need these funds, I would have a conversation with your lender immediately.
What type of questions should small business operators be prepared to ask these lenders, and what type of information should they be prepared to have available?
The information that you should be prepared, whether obviously what type of business organization you are, whether you're a sole proprietor, LLC, S-Corp, C-Corp, or a partnership, kind of depends on the type of documentation that you'll be providing your lender. You can look at the documentation as required at sba.gov/paycheck protection, but your typical payroll records for the last year is one item that needs to be provided, your recent tax returns, your personal tax returns, any business returns that you may have done, any of those types of documentations. What you want to do is when you go to your lender, you want to have all of your documentation that they need so that they can go ahead and enter in your application directly into the SBA system. So there's no waiting. You don't have to go in the back of the line with the lender. You hit the ground running and are prepared. So that would be the first thing that I would tell any of your audience out there that needs this loan. The second thing is when obviously discussing with a lender, you want to make sure that they're an approved PPP lender. And again, they will have to inform you of that, and you can certainly go online to sba.gov and research that and type in your zip code to make sure that they are one of the listed lenders in your region that are offering the PPP loan.
Is the funding on a first-come, first-serve basis?
It is. It is a first-come, first-serve. It is a national program, so there are not set-asides for specific states or targets for specific states.
And when you talk about the different types of lenders that are available, they run the gamut in terms of large banks that maybe have arenas and stadiums named for them and small neighborhood credit unions, right?
Yep, it's the full range. And since we're talking Cincinnati, you've got U.S. Bank and Fifth Third that are there, all the way down to the GE Credit Union is a member as well, or Day Air Credit Union or Wright Pack Credit Unions that are members as well. So it does certainly run the gamut.
So what about the emergency funding that's available where we hear about amounts up to $10,000? I think the acronym is EIDL. Has that been replenished as well?
So what you're referring to is our Emergency Injury Disaster Loan Program. Which there are two different paths on that where a business owner could apply for what is called an economic injury disaster loan advance, and that would be up to $10,000 a business owner would be able to receive. And then also overall, the economic injury disaster loan program, you can receive up to $2 million on it's a loan. It's not a forgivable loan like the PPP, but the loan portion of it would be up to a term of 30 years at 3.75% interest. Those are still offered. Congress did reallocate $60 billion more to that program. We are currently processing loans, and thus far there's been over $7 billion that has went out on that program.
Okay, so how long does it take for someone pursuing that route? Say they just want to make sure that they have the rent covered for the next couple of months and maybe some other incremental expenses that they might face. They don't need a major loan, but $10,000 would do the trick. How long until they would receive word on something like that?
So we've had historic interest in the economic injury disaster loan. So we are trying to play catch up. But what I will tell the audience is that we have begun dispersing funds and processing the loan. They should be hearing, if you applied for the loan, you should be hearing something soon. If you haven't, feel free to call the SBA customer service line, and we can provide a status of your application, and certainly whether you're approved or not approved. But I do know that there's been hundreds of thousands of folks, small business owners, that have received contact on whether or not they are going to get the economic injury disaster loan, and then certainly processing and closing those loans.
And how is that contact confirmed? You're not dealing with a lender in this case. You're dealing with the SBA directly, right? So how is notification of an award made?
It will be via email, and they'll be able to log into an online portal, and the portal will tell them if there's a need for additional documentation, if that loan is up above a certain dollar amount. Normally, anything over $50,000 requires additional tax documentation. If it gets above $250,000, personal collateral comes into place and whatnot. So there could be additional steps on the borrower's end in order to close a loan, and then certainly information on disbursement as well. On the economic injury disaster loan advances, those are just getting pushed out and deposited into the bank account information that the borrower supplied when they were applying for the loan.
And so again, Congress has allocated another $60 billion, you said, for the EIDL program. If people applied for these funding opportunities during the first round of funding but did not receive word yet, do they need to reapply or are they in queue?
For the PPP loan?
I'm sorry, for the EIDL.
No, there is no need for them to do it. If they've already applied, they are in queue. They're currently getting processed, and they will be contacted. If they want to contact us, we do have a customer service line, SBA customer service line, that they can call in. They can certainly reach out to the local district office, who can connect them in order to get a status of their EIDL loan.
And I hope not to ask a question that's too glib, but I imagine that your call center is probably getting a lot of calls right now. What tends to be the wait time for something like that if you call in?
We have brought on thousands of customer service agents. So thus far, it has been short, and short being within 5 to 10 minutes. There is a tiered system. So for general, you know, information, there's the first tier, and then if it gets a little more complicated, they have to go to the second tier, which has a little more, those folks have a little more access to more of the integral parts of the disaster application system. And then there's also a third tier that it goes into as well. So I do ask for your audience's patience when it comes to navigating our customer service line, but we will get you the information. It just may be, you know, a few 5 or 10 minute waits before you actually get to the specific information that you will need.
And again, we're talking with Rob Scott from the United States Small Business Administration Great Lakes Region, which has offices in Ohio, Indiana, and other states. We heard a representative from a local organization in our first segment talk about whether they were passed over for larger organizations, maybe because of deeper relationships with their banks. They might have deeper pockets, bigger accounts, and longer lasting relationships with banks. Can you talk a little bit about how relationships with financial institutions is playing a role in this, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, there have been stories where the larger national lending institutions have taken care of their larger customers first. There is no regulatory authority or legal authority that the SBA has to change that lender's processes. It's a private organization or a, you know, publicly traded lending institution. We have no authority from Congress to change how they do it. But what I will tell you is those folks with a good relationship with a banker or their local community bank or credit union, it's hard for them to ignore you or to put you off if your children are in the same little league or they're in Rotary with you or whatever you may have with their dealings. So I would say for the more face-to-face kind of customer service, your kind of local lenders are probably a little better if you need a little more TLC or a little more guidance than normal. Your larger lenders, they have hundreds of thousands of customers. It's hard for them to exactly manage a crisis like this. So I would implore your viewerships, whatever style of lender they like, I would implore they choose that.
We talked just a minute ago about your manpower at the phones. You've added thousands of folks to process these calls as they come in, you said. What about the online portals? We know that there were some challenges in the first round, just like a lot of the state unemployment websites, just an unprecedented amount of traffic hitting these things. Is that something that the SBA is prepared for this time around?
Yes, absolutely. So, several weeks ago when we opened up the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Portal, it struggled that first week until we could get some backup on it, because obviously, you know, we've never dealt with something like this. Government-wide hasn't really dealt with anything to this massive scale, specifically the Small Business Administration. So we put in some technical expertise. We certainly scaled up very quickly. And within, I would say, 2 weeks, somebody could apply for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan in under 5 minutes. And we had no issues on access or anything to it in order for folks to apply. For the PPP application, it's a little different because lenders are the ones accessing our system, so it's not that big of a strain compared to millions and millions of people coming into our system on the disaster side. So it's a little easier to scale that way, and we were a little more prepared under the PPP program.
We are throwing around a lot of terms here, and there are multiple components to the types of funds that are available, and a lot of this funding is coming from what we are now calling the CARES Act. That's the federal legislation, but the different programs that are being offered, whether through the SBA or through private lenders that are being assisted by the SBA, there are different things. So if we're talking about a Paycheck Protection Program loan and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, the EIDL, let's just give a quick brief overview of what all of those things are, just in case I've confused our listeners.
Certainly. So the PPP program or the Paycheck Protection Program is probably the one that the audience is hearing the most about. And what that is you actually have to go to your lender or find a lender in order to apply for it. The terms of the loan are essentially this. You can get it up to $10 million, 1% interest, and if you use 75% of it for payroll, keeping your employees on payroll, paying yourself, and then the other 25% for qualified business expenses, it is 100% forgiven. So if you comply, it's forgiven. That's the most popular item that we are promoting. Right now we are on round two of the PPP program. We are expected to likely run out of those funds by the end of this week. So act now if you want a PPP loan. The other program being the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, which has a term of up to $2 million at an interest rate at 3.75%. It is up to a 30-year term. That is not forgivable. That is a loan. And currently, we are no longer taking applications for that as of right now. Congress has reallocated $60 billion for the program, and we are currently processing those applications that have already been applied for.
Okay, so is it possible, since you could still apply previously, if people apply for both PPP and EIDL, is that something that businesses could have done?
Yes, they can actually get both.
Is there any disadvantage to that?
No disadvantage. The key to it is the fact that if you between the two, you got to make sure that they're used for different purposes. Obviously, the PPP program, you want to use it for payroll and 75% for payroll so that it can be forgiven. On the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, I would use that for, you know, any of your typical business expenses, whether it's, a lease for a vehicle that you use for your business or a mortgage or any of the other associated expenses for your business.
We're talking with Rob Scott. He is a regional director for the Small Business Administration Great Lakes Region. Are there any tips that you can offer from your perspective for business owners hoping to get funding? Is there anything that could make this easier for them?
Yeah, I mean, again, make sure you have all of your documentation for your business when you meet with your lender to apply for the PPP. Obviously, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, patience. If you have applied, contact the SBA customer service line. There's some other SBA debt relief options, too. If you have a current SBA loan, it is automatically deferred for 6 months. You don't need to make payments. We do have existing SBA programs that you can apply for, such as the 7(a) program, which offers express lines, credit lines, cap lines, any of that information, and also express bridge loans at up to $25,000. But overall, I would say, you know, there is a host of information on SBA.gov and through our resource partners like the Small Business Development Centers and our SCORE chapters, but also your local community has it. A lot of local governments are offering small business loans through their CDBG funds. The state of Ohio and other states are offering small business funds as well that you need to look into. So there's a lot of resources out there. You just got to do a little research online, and you can find them.
So we've got new funding for the program, the various programs that are available. Do we expect that if these funds dry up the way the first round did, that there will be additional funds?
There has been talk of that. Both Congress and President Trump has said if there's a need, that they would certainly try to fund that need. So the president has been on record saying that, as has many leadership in Congress has said it as well. So I would expect if it dries up and there's still a need, which we believe there will be, I would expect a third round of funding.
Okay, so again, people who are in search of these funds should probably act immediately.
Yes.
All right, I want to thank Rob Scott from the Small Business Administration, Great Lakes Region, for talking with us and giving us this very helpful information. Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And we've got a link to the SBA's website where you can find most of this information, again, at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. We want to let you know that, as always, we will stream and broadcast Governor Mike DeWine's daily briefing, daily weekday briefing here on 91.7 WVXU. He is expected to offer details today on a plan to, quote, reopen Ohio. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet, but we do hope to find out more from the governor today. He told reporters on Friday that the media could expect to hear more details about his plan to reopen the state on Monday. So whatever that might look like, we should get some new information on that today. You can listen to that live on 91.7. What DeWine said is that, quote, "I think it's better to wait until Monday when we can do it in a whole and people can see the whole sweep of what we're trying to do." If you follow Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky, you will have heard similar information from his office over the weekend during his daily press conferences that he also expects during his Monday news conference to start to address some of these issues about reopening the business sides of the shutdown caused by the COVID-19 global pandemic. And you have been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. As always, we want to hear from you, your comments, your questions, your concerns, and what you're going through. You can go to the WVXU app and click on the Talk to Us tab. That's a way to leave a voice recorded message that, with your permission, we could use on the air. So tell us how you're experiencing the global pandemic, or maybe you have a fun story to share. We want to hear that too. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 513-419-7100 or email your comments to talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter as always as well. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of all of our programs are online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.